Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. We head into the second hour of the show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. I know everyone's waiting for the Kevin Hurt fun fact. We're going to double up and do two fun facts tomorrow because with Kevin, it's just twice the fun. Big day today at the Olympic Games because Ted Ligety won a gold medal today on the slopes. It is the second gold medal of his career to go with the one he won in Turin. He becomes the first American man to win two gold medals in his career. A big moment for Ted Ligety, who had done nothing to this point at the Olympic Games of note, and then today puts together a brilliant run. Conditions were good today. Temperatures were hovering around freezing today, which is great because when they were skiing, I believe it was yesterday they were skiing, they started out at the top of the mountain and it would be all snow, and then they get to halfway down the run and it turned to rain. Not the greatest conditions to ski under. Today, evidently, the conditions were perfect there, and Ted Ligety won the gold medal. Bodie Miller finished 20th today, but he tweaked his knee. And at the age of 36, he's going to call it a career, it looks like, and he is not going to race in the slalom on Saturday, based on what he said today. Women's figure skating, a short program today as well. Ashley Wagner, Gracie Gold, two of the hopefuls for the United States in that. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Something that's very important. We talked about student attendance last half hour. Just getting into the no-show rate in college football. And there had to be, I think now what's happened is athletic departments have to take surveys among the student body just to find out, especially in football and men's basketball, because obviously those are the two sports where you're trying to create a difference. You know, you want to create a difference in everything, your volleyball program, your wrestling program, you know, any program, women's basketball program, and so forth. But, of course, the two signature sports in college nationally, okay, the two signature sports nationally in college are football and men's basketball. So you're trying to create a home field or home court advantage with your students. And it's interesting in hearing some of the responses from the Michigan students that certain things that I think marketers think and ticket people would think are important would be Wi-Fi connectivity. And Kevin made a great point yesterday on the show when he was saying, hey, look, he says, a lot of them are just using their parents' data plan. That's why it's not high on the list. It was eighth. And, you know, Kevin was spot on with that point yesterday. Something I hadn't thought of, even though I have a data plan that has two of my children on it. I hadn't thought of it. Kev did. And that's certainly one of the reasons. It was, you know, I want to go to the game with my friends. I want to see them win. I want to, you know, be around, you know, be in the student section and close to the field. The tailgating part was very important to the students, that socialization. Tennessee had done surveys and said, hey, look, you know, one of the keys for them is actually start time. The later the start time, the fewer the no-shows. And I think what we're finding also is the same story, and again, Kevin made another great point yesterday when it was dealing with this, that people, Kevin's point was, people want to tailgate before the game, enjoy the game, but when the game's over, maybe they tailgate a little bit, but they want to get on the road, get home. Great point. And the later the start time, the more time during the day to tailgate, enjoy, grill, whatever you want to do, play games, socialize, and then go in and enjoy the game. And, of course, the goal is let's see them win, all right? Let's see them win. And these are things that now have to be taken into account. There are certain games based on television that have to be at noon. But if you can get more start times that are later, 3:30, 4:30, 6:00, 7:30 or 8:00, the better shot you have of fewer no-shows in the stadium, and that it's a better experience overall for people. It seems to be that way. So we're going to open up the phone lines and talk about this later, tomorrow, Friday, and get your read as a fan on some of these issues. As a fan, does a later kickoff time make a difference? Basketball, Patrick Chambers taking his team to Nebraska. I want to talk a little bit about this. Patrick Chambers, I take his first 2 years, and really I've got to combine it into one, because when you're hired in June, you have no chance to really do anything except start building your first recruiting class, which won't play until your second season. There's not a single recruit that played for Patrick Chambers his first year. They were all Ed DeChellis' recruits. And Ed did fine, and Patrick had to be a caretaker, had to kind of win them over, establish a style, establish a mindset, and so forth. Then the second year, he goes without Tim Frazier, but still, there's still parts of that team that are his team. He's the one that got DJ Newbill to transfer. Brandon Taylor is integrated into the program and becomes a part of it and plays a lot for him in that second year. That's why I combined the first year. To me, for him, program-wise, this is in his second year. I firmly believe that he is a long-term solution. I firmly believe that. And I think that's one of the things you have to look for now. Instead of a short-term fix, you've got to look for a long-term solution. I believe firmly, just based on his coaching chops, what I see in his recruiting going into Philadelphia. Penn State's had very little success ever there. He's had a lot of success there in Philly, suburban Philly, because that's where the players are. And also his ability in terms of personality, publicity-wise, to get out front on his program all the time and talk about what is going well with his program. In today's game, you have to have that. People say, hire a big-name coach. Okay, outside of Shaka Smart, okay, who is it? I mean, even in Indiana right now, Tom Crean's in his sixth year. I was out there last week. They're talking about Shaka Smart. He took them from nothing and a scandal with Kelvin Sampson, and they had nothing the first couple of years and has made them back into something. I've got to give him credit for that. And good buddy Corey Geiger is on the line. Corey, great to have you with us. Welcome, bud. Corey, how are you, buddy?
Steve, I just wanted to ask you a question real quick because I think this is a great topic. And you know I love my college basketball. With the new AD coming in this summer, how important do you think next season will be for Pat Chambers if he is going to stay for the long haul? Because I'm with you. I really like the guy. He brings a lot to the program. But at the same time, they lose Frazier. If they go 5-13 or something in the league next year under the new AD, could there be some pressure because that AD would maybe want to bring in his own guy?
The question is, do you have a new AD?
That seems to be the way that they're going to go. I think Joyner's done a good job, but you know as well as I do, there's a lot of people out there that don't want Joyner gone.
I understand that, but sometimes with a new president, you know, first of all, knowing who the operations staff and all the deans are is a priority too.
He did say yesterday in an interview that he's looking for someone who's well rounded in athletics, and I think it is somewhere on his priority list. So that would be
Corey. That'd be you. This is your chance.
Pat, over the course of maybe 5 more years, Steve, maybe could do those things that you're talking about.
But you have to have the patience from the athletic director to do it. Because to me, his first 2 years combined into 1 year. Because, I mean, he was a caretaker the first year. So this is, to me, on my clock with him, is his second year here. Because Brandon Taylor, for example, is his first recruit. And this is his second year along with DJ Newbill. So the question is, what we don't have in athletics today is patience. Now, let's take, for example, Syracuse basketball. Jim Boeheim has had a long, storied, incredible career. How many football coaches have they had up there?
Dick McPherson, then Pasqualoni, then the disaster of Greg Robinson. So they've had about five since the 80s.
Yeah, and they just don't have, I mean, at Syracuse, they'd love to have, obviously, really, really good. I mean, for whatever reason, there are certain things for certain programs. And I also think that the Shaka Smart thing is an interesting situation. Because, again, he can get where he's going, where he is. He doesn't need to be at a BCS program to get to the Final Four because he knows he can get there where he is now.
And like I said, I think Pat, over the course of maybe a five-year window, could do those things.
I do, too.
But when you're talking patience, I'm just saying if they don't show immediate results, that first year is going to be very big for him, I think, under that new AD, because the new AD will have an opportunity then to put his own – he can't do it in football, so the new AD may want to put his own stamp. You may get a Steve Peterson kind of guy, not say it will be Steve Peterson from Pitt, but maybe get a guy that wants to put his own stamp on the program. I just wonder how significant just next year would be that Pat would need to show that AD very quickly that he's the kind of guy that can do it for the long haul.
And that's an excellent question, and the only way to answer it on my end of it is to say it's going to depend on the personality the individual brought in and what their philosophy is. They may want to do exactly what you're saying. I'm going to put my own stamp on it. Or they may sit back and say, look, okay, you've done this to this point. All right, let's see a couple more years, and then we'll make a decision on what to do.
Yeah, it's a great discussion, Steve. I think it's interesting to see the progress that the team has made. They're getting some wins. I kind of rate progress on the eye test, but you've got to get wins too. And I like to see what they've done. But again, for Pat's sake, I'm just not sure that 5-13 or 6-12 next year would cut it if that AD might feel like he could bring in his own guy.
Yeah, the one loss he'll have will be Frazier.
I actually like the roster for next year.
The roster for next year is not that bad. But part of the roster for next year is I don't see a lot of early entry changeover in the Big Ten. That's the other part, too, that I also look at. Well, how the roster is going to change on the other teams as well. There'll be some change at Ohio State, a little bit at Michigan State. Not going to be much at Nebraska, for example. They're only going to lose Ray Gallegos. Minnesota's going to lose a couple guys. So I think Richard Pitino's going to be in a little of a changeover mode. Losing Drew Crawford's going to be big for Northwestern. So it's not just what you lose and gain. It's also what the other teams lose.
You think about it, Steve. You think about how nutty the Big Ten is, and you know this as well as anyone. That loss to Penn State by Nebraska, that may swing Nebraska on the other side of the bubble. Nebraska's 6-6. Nebraska's resume is starting to actually look pretty decent. So, it's interesting the way the season plays out. Some of these losses or wins that teams have early on that you think might be given, boy, when you get a Nebraska that's put itself on the bubble, that's remarkable, to be honest. I can't believe they were able to pull off that win the other day. That was a great win.
They've now won three in a row. They've won five of their last six since playing Penn State. They're now 53 in the RPI at this moment. They still have other opportunities, and at home they're dynamic. They're 11-1 at home. They've been able to get and the interesting thing, Corey, is obviously I ran their numbers to do my chart today. Their numbers are no different than when they played Penn State. I thought there would be a change. Are they scoring more? Are they giving up fewer points? Has the field goal percentage defense changed? No, 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 and no.
Maybe that loss at Penn State was the kind of thing that they needed, to let something get away from them late. Maybe just like Penn State losing at Purdue, that was a loss that kind of helped them turn some things around.
Yeah, it very well could be. Now, Pettaway, the two transfers, Pettaway and Pitchford from Texas Tech and Florida, respectively, played terrifically against Michigan State. They had the right two guys playing big at the right moment on the road, and Payne got in foul trouble, which helped.
Steve, here would be my last question for you. And I love the college basketball talk. This is right up my alley. I wondered why Pat didn't go get a big guy for this year. I see Jordan Dickerson doing some things. But, again, keep in mind my original question of maybe how significant next year could be for him.
Right.
I know football and basketball, they don't like going the JUCO route. But, man, if Pat can go get a quality 6'8", 6'9", scorer from the JUCO route, I'm talking score. You know, right. they're going to need points in the paint next year.
Sure.
You know, could that be something that he has to be taking a long, hard look at?
Anyway, he's taking a long, because we know, and you and I both know, you can say the name, I can't say the name. They have a verbal on that 6'8", 6'9", guy you're talking about that's in the early signing period for next year. They've got that verbal already. But the question is getting somebody into the program next year like that. And I think part of that's going to be, I think they feel between Donovan Jack and Jordan Dickerson, they can get that next year to fill the breach until the young man we're talking about is now into the mix for the year after.
But then again, then that kind of gets me back to my main point of, if Pat's playing for 2 years from now, he might want to start reconsidering.
Right. But Dick, you know, but I expect Dickerson to be better next year, not exponentially, not a, you know, I think, but I'm talking about a guy that can maybe give you 6-7 points a game, give you 5 rebounds a game. You take Donovan Jack, and now you kick him up to maybe 9 points and 6 boards a game. You combine the two of that, maybe you've got something there that kind of allows you to be more than passable with your guard play around you.
Well, can they check to see if Cornley's got any eligibility left? Look, to me, with all due respect to Dickerson, Jack, 6-7, that's not what I'm talking about, is 6-7, 9 points. I'm talking about 14-7, a guy that can be really, if you could think of, you know, Jamel Cornley, a guy that can be a force inside with these big teams like Iowa and Michigan State. I just think that even with everything they've got coming back, the good guard play with Newell and Johnson, I just wonder what they're going to do, you know, over the long haul in the Big Ten if they don't have a force inside.
Because
what about Moore?
And Julian Moore is a guy to watch for next year. Okay, Julian, because you know what? When Julian Moore played, I liked Julian Moore. And he's a 6'10 guy that is now, they put him in the weight room about 4 times a week right now because he's in a non-playing mode. And Peyton Banks gets into the mix next year, too. So there's a couple of unknowns. And when I watch Moore play, Moore's live. I mean, he's live. But I know what you're talking about, Corey. Corey's talking about an intelligent basketball play that's a little different mode. In other words, there's less than 10 on the shot clock. Or, okay, I've gone through a scoring drought of 4 straight trips down the floor. I call time. What play do I call? Boom. Postman, down low, muscle, gets me a shot. That's what Corey's talking about. That's good hoops.
Yeah, good discussion. Steve, I appreciate it. Sorry to sabotage the show, but
Somebody had to, man.
I really enjoy the college basketball talk.
Somebody had to. Thanks, Corey.
Thanks, guys.
Corey Geiger joining us, jumping into the show today. Great to hear from him. And that big guy is, and when I talk about Dickerson and Jack combining, now they would combine based on my numbers for about 15 points and maybe 11 rebounds a game. Now that could be productive enough. But Julian Moore, who played early, and they're redshirting him now, and he's eligible for the redshirt. He'll be back play next year. He also would get into that mix, which might allow them to take Donovan Jack, Redding zone, and move him out to a forward spot where he can face the basket and play some ball. And you don't know, now that Shep Garner will come in next year, Isaiah Washington will come in from Williamsport next year. You know, they're guards. They do have a verbal already from a 6'8 guy. That is in the next signing period, the next signing cycle. All right? So file that one away. So can they get that guy? Because Pat's had to change his philosophy. Pat really felt if you had 5 mobile guys, run the floor and so forth, beat teams to spots, you could win. But he said after going through the Big Ten, he said, you know what? I need a big guy. If watching the Big Ten, you just need a big guy. When you see a Mitch McGarry and Adrian Payne, last year a Cody Zeller, Gabe Olushanie, or an Adam Woodbury. My goodness, I mean White for Iowa. Really a power forward who's so versatile. He's out there playing the 3 spot right now at 6'8". A 3-man at 6'8". Who can move and shoot. All right. We'll be talking a lot more about college basketball. Ted Ligety winning a gold medal today at the Olympic Games at alpine skiing. His 2nd career gold, the first American man to ever do that.
And the United States medal count gets ratcheted up by that. Also, women's figure skating has finally hit the final figure skating event of the games. Short program today, and of course, hockey on top of everything else. Today, we are from the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And coming up in the next half hour, our old friend Tony DeFazio from the Pittsburgh Sports Report. We're going to talk a little bit about the Olympic Games, but we're also going to talk about with him about the Steelers and free agency here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915. Sunbury Motor Company has over 300 new Fords and over 100 new Hyundais that must be sold now. Get savings up to $11,000 during the January inventory liquidation event at Sunbury Motor Company. Liquidation means vehicles need to fly off the lot as quickly as possible, and Sunbury Motors will do what it takes to earn your business now. See all of the great deals on new Fords and Hyundais now, because time is of the essence, and if you wait too long, the new Ford or Hyundai you've had your eyes on will be in someone else's driveway. At Sunbury Motor Company, they never pressure you into buying a vehicle you don't want or that's out of your price range. They want to make sure you're getting the best possible deal with the best possible service before, during, and after the sale. This is the time to buy that new Ford or Hyundai, and this is the place. Stop at Sunbury Motor Company now while the selection's at its best. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome back. Great to have you with us. Final half hour of the show. Tomorrow's show will be from Lincoln, Nebraska, as once again, America's most traveled show continues to hit the road. Whether it's Marion at the U.S. Open, the Pocono 400, which will be the Pocono 500 this year, all the Big Ten venues, Super Bowl Media Day, NCAA basketball tournament last year in Philadelphia. We've hit the road with this show, and we're going to take it to Lincoln. Why? Because every show on the planet needs to play Lincoln. We'll be there for Penn State basketball. Their first trip into Pinnacle Bank Arena for me and my career. Now, Dick Girardi, this is how bored you get on the road sometimes. One day, the two of us decided to figure out how many arenas we've been to. So for me, tomorrow, Pinnacle Bank Arena will be arena number 129 in my career. For Dick, it'll be arena number 151. That's how bored we get on the road sometimes. The games are exciting. The camaraderie's great. But you do have lulls. Okay, what do you want to do? Well, one time from Chicago down to Champaign, I remember we did a game at Northwestern. Basketball game. But then I had to fly back to State College to do a Big Ten Network wrestling match. And Dick decided he'd stay in Chicago and he would cover Villanova DePaul. Jeff Tarman's brother lives in Chicago. And the next game was at Illinois. So it was actually a Northwestern Illinois swing. So the team went down right away to Champaign. So I fly back. I do the wrestling match on TV. Basketball had been on a Thursday night. Friday night, I did that on TV, and then I flew back to Chicago Saturday morning for what was going to be a Sunday game. So I get there Saturday morning. Dick, of course, rents a car, picks me up at the airport. We swing by Jim Tarman Jr.'s apartment in or condo, I should say, not apartment, condo in Chicago. He lives right near Wrigley Field, and we pick up Jeff Tarman. So the three of us are driving down to Champaign. Now, once you get past the south side of Chicago, things dramatically open up and Illinois becomes a different state. Downstate is completely different than, obviously, the Chicago area. And it becomes a series of farms, and it's wide open. It's also a two-hour drive of wide open. So Dick says, Dick, who, by the way, has a policy, I will not be passed, is humming along the interstate. He says, well, we need to play a game. I think Jeff said, license plates? He says, no. He says, let's count the silos. Yes, you get a little bored sometimes on a couple of the trips. You do. So at one point when you're sitting around at a dinner, you take out a media guide, and the two of you sit there and go, okay, how many arenas have we been to in our respective careers? Well, tomorrow for Dick, it'll be number 151, and for me, it'll be number 129. All right. Okay. That's a little bored. I understand that. The Olympic Games today, Ted Ligety won gold. Alpine skiing, his second gold, first American man to ever do that. He won gold in Torino in 2006 as well. He gets his second gold medal. He had done nothing in the previous events. Super G, downhill. But today in the giant slalom, he was able to win gold. So a great win for him. Bodie Miller finished 20th, tweaked his left knee, the one that's surgically repaired, says he probably will not go in the slalom on Saturday and is going to be calling it an Olympic career. All right, let's turn to Pittsburgh now and talk Pittsburgh sports. We bring in Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Tony, it's great to have you with us.
Always happy to spend a Friday with you. How are you, Steve?
It's great to be with you, Tony. A.J. Burnett, $16 million. It's obvious now why, because Cole Hamels will not be able to open the season. There's no way the Pirates were going to go in that neighborhood, were they?
No, they weren't going to go close to that. In fact, they were trying to get away with paying about half of that for A.J. Burnett this year. Certainly, you can't, you know, that would have been almost ridiculous for the Pirates to pay $16 million for Burnett. But nonetheless, it was a calculated gamble the Pirates took, and at this point, they came up on the losing end. I think they probably could have gotten Burnett for somewhat less than the 16. He probably would have signed the qualifying offer, as a matter of fact, for 14.1 had they made that offer, but they didn't want to go there either. They're taking a gamble that perhaps Jameson Taillon, or they're going to be able to get Jeff Locke back to his All-Star break form, or Edinson Volquez is going to be able to perform at least as a solid fifth starter. It's a lot of ifs, and none of them probably have the solidity that the A.J. Burnett would have offered. But nonetheless, another key veteran goes to play elsewhere for the Pirates.
All right. One thing he did, though, he was a mentor in the staff. The importance of losing someone as a mentor that's been around the block a few times.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal. I mean, you know, we're talking about a young staff. Certainly, obviously, one of the guys that's going to be key on this staff is Gerrit Cole, who doesn't have a full Major League season under his belt. Certainly, he benefited from pitching in the postseason last year, and you would think that's going to help him. But one of the guys I mentioned earlier was Jameson Taillon, who they count on, coming up, if not later this year, then certainly by next season, probably this year, though. And there's a couple other guys who are probably, you're probably going to see at some point in the rotation. A guy like Brandon Compton, who was a spot starter for them last year and did well, he'll have a chance to win the fifth job. So, I think they are definitely going to miss that. There's no question that A.J. Burnett taught a lot of these guys how to compete. Jeff Locke was a guy who you can certainly put into that group as well. And there's a lot of young bullpen guys who A.J. Burnett rubbed off on as well. So, no question, they got a lot out of A.J. for 2 years, but I think one more year probably would have been ideal.
Well, when they started spring training last year, they didn't expect Gerrit Cole to do what he did. He really is the guy that takes that spot when it really comes down to it, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, no question. I mean, last year, down the stretch last year, the two guys who you looked at and thought were the top two guys on the staff were Burnett and Liriano, and yeah, there's no question that Cole moves into that spot. You know, really, he did that in the playoffs last year. He started game five against St. Louis, when A.J. Burnett thought he deserved that start. It went to the rookie, Gerrit Cole. So that tells you how, and Cole performed well in that game also. So that tells you how, what the Pirates think of Gerrit Cole, and there's no question they're going to count on him to continue pitching the way he did down the stretch and to do it for a full season. But that's why this is such a risk, though, because, great pitchers have taken backward steps their second season in the major leagues, and it wouldn't be that big of a shock to see Gerrit Cole go through a little bit of a backslide, not a major one, but certainly for him to perform like he did in the playoffs last year, to see him do that all season this year, I think that's asking a lot.
No question about that as they go down to spring training. All right, Gabby Sanchez lost 20 pounds.
20 pounds. At least in terms of effort, he's making it.
Yeah, I mean, I think Gary Sanchez might be looking at this, and, you know, possibly, you know, legitimately so, as kind of a last chance for him to be a starter in the major leagues. That may, you know, I think a lot of people thought that that chance probably already passed him by. But because of how the Pirates organization is set up, he's going to get another crack at it this year, at least to be a you know, a platoon guy and get regular at bats. I think that's all he is a platoon guy, but I think he's going to try to prove he can be a little bit more than that. And quite frankly, he had the weight to lose. You know, he's going to try to make this his job full time here. And right now, the competition isn't going to be all that stiff. I mean, he's the only true major league first baseman on that roster. A couple other guys are going to get some cracks at it. But they have a lot further to go than Gabby Sanchez, though.
All right. Obviously, that we're getting up to the free agent deadline. Any rumblings in the NFL?
No, you know, not a lot. Not a lot at all. You know, this is probably going to be the group that they go with, although it wouldn't be surprising to see them make a move, perhaps at first base. But that's, you know, it's not going to be a major addition at this point. You know, Ike Davis is still a name, you know, that is mentioned. And, right. You know, again, I really have no idea what direction they're going to go, if they do anything at all. Something tells me that they may not make any kind of a move until July. You know, I think maybe that's part of the reason they don't want to spend this money now, because they may feel they have to spend it, or it's better spent in July.
All right. Now let's get to the Steelers for a moment, because now it's getting to the point where, well, take, for example, what Detroit did. Detroit made, the Lions made some moves, got rid of a wideout, so forth. Any speculation on what the Steelers might or might not do?
Yeah, you know, I think we're going to see some moves on the defensive side of the football. Whether Lamar Woodley comes back or not, I think is going to dictate the rest of the moves that they make. But there's a guy who they certainly could part ways. It may be better for both of those parties in the long run if they do part ways. And I think you're probably going to see something happen with Ike Taylor, whether it's a contract renegotiation or, you know, whether they decide to let Ike Taylor walk. That certainly could happen. There's been a lot of speculation about Troy Polamalu. I do think that Troy Polamalu will come back. He's got another year on that contract. It's a stiff one, a stiff price to pay. But I think if they make some of those other moves, Woodley, Taylor, then you do see Polamalu come back.
Well, the Olympics, of course, going on. The Penguins are heavily invested in this thing. So for the fans, how interested are they when they watch a game where Malkin and Crosby are on different sides?
Yeah, I think that's going to be very interesting, and we're going to see that tomorrow. We're going to see some of the American guys go up against Malkin tomorrow when the U.S. plays Russia at 7:30. But, yeah, you know, I think that is very interesting. There definitely is a lot of fan interest in that around here, and you know, the way the Olympics ended 4 years ago, certainly, and the way they were treated at the first game in Pittsburgh was kind of an interesting thing. I mean, you know, Crosby obviously won the gold, and his Canadian team won the gold medal. Crosby scored the game winner in overtime, and it was really interesting, Steve, when they played at CONSOL Energy Center 4 years ago. Crosby, you know, they showed a highlight of Canada scoring the goal, and the place fills with boos, and then Crosby skates out, and those boos turn to cheers right away, booing the Canadian goal but cheering the player that scored it. Was pretty interesting, and I guess that's pretty much how the Penguins fans are following this thing.
Right, exactly. For Pitt, when you have it won like that and then you lose like that, because they really had not played well entering the game. They really had not – they'd been winning but not playing well, and they know it. They're the first ones to tell you. Then to play a game like that, how devastating was that?
Well, I think it was, you know, perhaps more devastating even for the fans than the players. That's certainly a heartbreaking loss for the players. You could see it on their sleeves and their faces when they – you know, when the game was over. But they get back out onto the court the next day, and they get to play again, you know, sooner rather than later. So, you know, to be honest with you, Steve, this year and even over the past couple of years, Pitt has lost a couple of games like that. They've lost some real heartbreakers. And they have been able to bounce back, and that's obviously going to be the key. They go to North Carolina tomorrow. And you're right, it's a team that hasn't been playing well. You know, we knew at the beginning of the year this was going to be their rough conference stretch. Two back-to-back teams with Duke and then Virginia, and then Syracuse and North Carolina back-to-back, which they're finishing up with that this weekend. So getting a pretty good read on exactly what we thought this team was, and frankly, Steve, they're turning out to be pretty much what a lot of people thought. They're a pretty good team. They're not a very good team. When they play the best, they haven't been able to beat them. But they did play a pretty good game, a very good game against the number one team in the country. And you have to just take your hat off to Tyler Ennis. He was a great player, hitting a great shot. You know, Pitt did a lot of things right on that inbounds pass, making him catch it at the baseline and facing him up, not just turning and running with him. But the kid made a spectacular play. Yeah. Talk about the air coming out of a building. You know, 4.4 seconds you go from knocking off number one to just another loss.
I think Pitt's a team that can get out of the first weekend of the NCAAs. I think that's their top out, but they can. But they're capable of that. I really believe
well,
that.
I think they're capable of it. By no means do I think that's something that should be expected. The way they've played lately, you know, Steve. If Lamar Patterson doesn't score, they've got a problem against anybody.
But you know what, Tony?
You know, depending on what kind of matchup they get, maybe Patterson will be able to score. But if he doesn't, they're going to have a problem against just about anybody when they get to that kind of a tournament.
But you know what, Tony? And this is something a lot of people don't take into account. What Syracuse has done is really remarkable. And really what Pitt's done is also strong. You have...
Yeah, I mean, they're in the ACC. Yeah, they're 20-5
right.
overall. This
right.
is not a bad basketball
well,
team.
Well, no. Here's my
team,
point, though.
You know, like you said, that just when they're playing the top teams, they've come close. But they just haven't been able to make a play at the end of the game.
Yeah.
And the defense has been there, and I think that's what's killing them against some of the better teams is they just have run out of offensive options.
Right.
You know, you can continue to stop Miami or stop a Virginia Tech. It's a little bit tougher to continue to stop a Virginia or a Duke
right.
or a Syracuse.
Right, but here's my point about that. I think a lot of fans, and I mean even media, have to realize, when you're playing all new opponents, you have no idea what their tendencies are. Until you really start playing them. And for the opponents, you mentioned Miami, taking Virginia Tech that they played the other day and so forth. They only have to get ready for Pitt, Syracuse, and Notre Dame that's new in their schedule. Notre Dame, Pitt, and Syracuse have to familiarize themselves with everybody. And that is a bigger challenge than people realize.
Steve, what a great point you make. I mean, and, you know, looking at the point you just made, it's probably no coincidence that two of Pitt's better games, albeit losses, have come against Syracuse. They've played those games very, very well. That's an opponent they know. It's a style they're prepared for.
Yep.
And, you know, they're not rattled or taken aback by playing Syracuse. No matter how good they are, they know what they're walking into. They know the battle they're in. So I think you make a great point there. And it'll be interesting to see how they wrap up the end of this ACC season.
Yep. I saw it with Penn State. You know, I saw it firsthand in Penn State football and basketball. That's why, you know, you can hearken back on your own experience to understand what somebody else is going through. Hey, thanks so much, Tony. Have a great weekend. Always great hearing from you.
Always enjoy it. Thank you, Steve.
And that's Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Got Tony on a little earlier this week, which is good. And we'll talk to him again next week. Get everybody up to date on that. And that's something that's very important. It's a factor. It's not an excuse. That when you sit down and you prepare, everybody gets to see you once or twice. You get to see everybody yourself for the first time all the way through. You don't have any real tendency on what Duke does, what North Carolina does, because you have not been playing them on a year-in and year-out basis. Clemson may not be able to win at North Carolina. In fact, Clemson has never won at North Carolina, ever. But that doesn't mean going into the game scouting-wise, they don't already have a great feel for what Roy Williams likes and doesn't like. The Clemson coaching staff already knows personnel-wise, especially guys that have been in the program a second and third, maybe even a fourth year, what they like to do, what their tendency is, and so forth. When you see it live and its practical application, it really gives you a better feel. When you go through it the first time and they're all new to you, and the speed of what they do is all new to you, it is a bigger challenge than people realize. Sounds like an excuse, but you do try to explain certain things that are a little bit off the grid that people would not think about along the way, and that's one of them. Coming up tomorrow, Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. We're going to talk about corporate sponsorships, where things stand in baseball. We're also going to talk about corporate sponsorships with the Olympics. Are they worth it to the corporate sponsors? The Olympic Games have become, since Peter Ueberroth, huge business, great marketing opportunity, and the eyes of the world literally are upon the 2 weeks at that location and on those athletes and those sports. The eyes of the world are not just the eyes of a country, the eyes of a world. Are the Olympic Games worth it to sponsors? At the same time, are the Olympic Games worth it to corporate sponsors when the primetime stuff is all on tape with no live, for example, where people know the results? We've already told you today that Ted Ligety has won a gold medal in alpine skiing in the giant slalom. Well, they'll show it tonight, and they'll do it brilliantly. NBC's production is just outstanding. How they do it, the way they edit it down, where it's you're not seeing all 20 skiers, you get to see the select ones that you need to see, is brilliant. But at the same time, you already know the result. How do corporate partners, how do they feel about such things? How do they feel about, you know, having something air that is taped? I mean, is it worth it to them? I mean, remember, a lot of corporate, there not a lot, a couple of corporate partners, a couple of them, got out of the cold weather Super Bowl and doubled down on next year's Super Bowl in Glendale. Is that what they're going to do with the Olympics? We'll find out from Tony tomorrow. Enjoyed it today very much. Aaron Hamlin, bronze medalist in luge. Jason Dombach, general manager of State College Spikes. Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Corey Geiger, Altoona Mirror. We had a lot of fun today. We had Chris Branch on from Clearwater yesterday on the Phillies. So we enjoyed it very much. And tomorrow, a couple of Olympic fun facts from Kevin as we roll into Thursday's show from Lincoln. Today from the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. I'm Steve Jones on News Radio 1070 WKOK.